Section 2. Components, replacements, repairs, and accumulation of fixed capital. In any investment of capital, the separate elements of the fixed capital have different lifetimes, and therefore different turnover times. In a railway, for instance, the rails, sleepers, earthworks, terminals, bridges, tunnels, locomotives, and carriages have different functional periods and times of reproduction. Hence, the capital advanced for them has different times of turnover. For a great number of years, buildings, platforms, water tanks, viaducts, tunnels, cuttings, dams, in short, everything called works of art in English railroading, do not require any renewal. The things which wear out most are the tracks and rolling stock. Originally, in the construction of modern railways, it was the prevailing opinion, nursed by the most prominent practical engineers, that a railway would last a century, and that the wear and tear of the rails was so imperceptible that it could be ignored for all financial and other practical purposes. 100 to 150 years was supposed to be the life of good rails. But it was soon found that the life of a rail, which naturally depends on the speed of the locomotives, the weight and number of trains, the diameter of the rails, and on a multitude of other attendant circumstances, did not exceed an average of 20 years. In some railway terminals, great traffic centres, the rails even wear out every year. About 1867 began the introduction of steel rails, which cost about twice as much as iron rails, but which last more than twice as long. The lifetime of wooden sleepers was from 12 to 15 years. It was also ascertained, with regard to the rolling stock, that freight cars wear out faster than passenger cars. The life of a locomotive was estimated in 1867 to be about 10 to 12 years. The wear and tear is first of all a result of use. As a rule, quote, the wear of the rails is proportionate to the number of trains, unquote. Royal Commission on Railways, number 17645. Minutes of evidence taken before the commissioners, presented to both Houses of Parliament, London, 1867. Quote, with increased speed, the wear and tear of a railway increased in a higher ratio than the square of the speed. That is to say, if you doubled the speed of the engine, you more than quadrupled the cost of wear and tear of the road. Unquote. Royal Commission on Railways, number 17046. Wear and tear is furthermore caused by the action of natural forces. For instance, sleepers suffer not only from actual wear, but also from rot. Quote, the cost of maintaining the road does not depend so much upon the wear and tear of the traffic passing over it, as upon the quality of the wood, iron, bricks, and mortars exposed to the atmosphere. A month of severe water would do more damage to the road of a railway than a year's traffic. Unquote. R. P. Williams, On the Maintenance of Permanent Way. Paper read at the Institute of Civil Engineers, autumn 1867. R. P. Williams' paper was published in Money Market Review of December 2, 1867. Finally, here as everywhere else in modern industry, the moral depreciation plays a role. After the lapse of 10 years, one can generally buy the same number of cars and locomotives for £30,000 that would previously have cost £40,000. Depreciation in the rolling stock must be set at 25% of the market price, even when there is no depreciation whatever in its use values. Lardner, Railway Economy. Quote, tube bridges will not be replaced in their present form, unquote, because now there are better forms for such bridges. Quote, Ordinary repairs, taking away gradually and replacing, are not practicable, unquote. W. P. Adams, Roads and Rails, London, 1862. The instruments of labour are largely modified all the time by the progress of industry. Hence, they are not replaced in their original, but in their modified form. On the one hand, the mass of the fixed capital invested in a certain bodily form, and endowed in that form with a certain average life, constitutes one reason for the only gradual pace of the introduction of new machinery, etc., and therefore an obstacle to the rapid general introduction of improved instruments of labour. On the other hand, competition compels the replacement of the old instruments of labour by new ones before the expiration of their natural life, especially when decisive changes occur. Such premature renewals of factory equipment on a rather large social scale are mainly enforced by catastrophes or crises. By wear and tear, moral depreciation excepted, is meant that part of value which the fixed capital, on being used, gradually transmits to the product, in proportion to its average loss-of-use value. This wear and tear takes place partly in such a way that the fixed capital has a certain average durability. It is advanced for this entire period in one sum. After the termination of this period, it must be totally replaced. So far as living instruments of labour are concerned, for instance, horses, their reproduction is timed by nature itself. Their average lifetime as instruments of labour is determined by laws of nature. As soon as this term has expired, they must be replaced by new ones. A horse cannot be replaced piecemeal. It must be replaced by another horse. Other elements of fixed capital permit of a periodical or partial renewal. In this instance, partial or periodical replacement must be distinguished from gradual extension of the business. The fixed capital consists in part of homogeneous constituents which do not, however, last the same length of time, but are renewed piecemeal at various intervals. This is true, for instance, of the rails and railway stations, which must be replaced more often than those of the remainder of the trackage. It also applies to sleepers, which on the Belgian railways had to be renewed in the 40s at the rate of 8% annually, according to Lardner, so that all the sleepers were renewed in the course of 12.5 years. Hence we have here the following situation. A certain sum is advanced for a certain kind of fixed capital for, say, 10 years. This expenditure is made at one time. But a definite part of this fixed capital, the value of which has entered into the value of the product and been converted with it into money, is replaced in kind every year, while the remainder continues to exist in its original body form. It is this advance in one sum, and the only partial reproduction in bodily form, which distinguish, as fixed, this capital from circulating capital. Other pieces of the fixed capital consist of heterogeneous components, which wear out in unequal periods of time and must so be replaced. This applies particularly to machines. What we have just said concerning the different durabilities of different constituent parts of a fixed capital applies in this case to the durability of different component parts of any machine figuring as a piece of this fixed capital. With regard to the gradual extension of the business in the course of the partial renewal, we make the following remarks. Although, as we have seen, the fixed capital continues to perform its functions in the process of production in kind, a part of its value, proportionate to the average wear and tear, has circulated with the product, has been converted into money, and forms an element in the money reserve fund intended for the replacement of the capital, pending its reproduction in kind. This part of the value of the fixed capital transformed into money may serve to extend the business or to make improvements in the machinery which will increase the efficiency of the latter. Thus, reproduction takes place in larger or smaller periods of time, and this is, from the standpoint of society, reproduction on an enlarged scale. Extensive, if the means of production is extended. Intensive, if the means of production is made more effective. This reproduction on an extended scale does not result from accumulation, transformation of surplus value into capital, but from the reconversion of the value which has branched off, detached itself in the form of money, from the body of the fixed capital into new additional, or at least more effective, fixed capital of the same kind. Of course, it depends partly on the specific nature of the business, to what extent and in what proportions it is capable of such gradual addition. Hence also, in what amount a reserve fund must be collected to be reinvested in this way, and what period of time this requires. To what extent, furthermore, improvements in the details of existing machinery can be made, depends, of course, on the nature of these improvements and the construction of the machine itself. How well this point is considered at the very outset in the construction of railways is shown by Adams. Quote, "The whole structure should be set out on the principle which governs the beehive, capacity for indefinite extension. Any fixed and decided symmetrical structure is to be deprecated, as needing subsequent pulling down in case of enlargement." Unquote. This depends largely on the available space. In the case of some buildings, additional stories may be built. In the case of others, lateral extension, hence more land, is required. Within capitalist production, there is on the one side much waste of material, on the other, much impracticable lateral extension of this sort, partly to the injury of the labour power, in the gradual expansion of the business, because nothing is undertaken according to a social plan, but everything depends on the infinitely different conditions, means, etc., with which the individual capitalist operates. This results in a great waste of the productive forces. This piecemeal reinvestment of the money reserve fund, that is, of that part of the fixed capital which has been reconverted into money, is easiest in agriculture. A field of production of a given area is here capable of the greatest possible gradual absorption of capital. The same applies to where there is natural reproduction, as in cattle breeding. Fixed capital entails special maintenance costs. A part of this maintenance is provided by the labour process itself. Fixed capital spoils if it is not employed in the labour process. See Volume 1, Chapters 8 and 15, on wear and tear of machinery when not in use. The English law, therefore, explicitly treats it as waste if rented lands are not cultivated according to the custom of the land. W. A. Holdsworth, Barrister at Law, The Law of Landlord and Tenant, London, 1857. This maintenance resulting from use in the labour process is a free gift inherent in the nature of living labour. Moreover, the preservative power of labour is of a twofold character. On the one hand, it preserves the value of the materials of labour by transferring it to the product. On the other hand, it preserves the value of the instruments of labour without transferring this value to the product, by preserving their use value through their activity in the process of production. The fixed capital, however, requires also a positive expenditure of labour for its maintenance in good repair. The machinery must be cleaned from time to time. It is a question here of additional labour without which the machinery becomes useless, of warding off the noxious influences of the elements, which are inseparable from the process of production. Hence it is a question of keeping the machinery literally in working order. It goes without saying that the normal durability of fixed capital is calculated on the supposition that all the conditions under which it can perform its functions normally during that time are fulfilled, just as we assume, in placing a man's life at 30 years on average, that he will wash himself. It is here not a question of replacing the labour contained in the machine, but of constant additional labour made necessary by its use. It is not a question of labour performed by the machine, but of labour spent on it, of labour which is not an agent of production, but raw material. The capital expended for this labour must be classed as circulating capital, although it does not enter into the labour process proper to which the product owes its existence. This labour must be continually expended in production, hence its value must be continually replaced by that of the product. The capital invested in it belongs in that part of circulating capital which has to cover the unproductive costs and is to be distributed over the produced values according to an annual average calculation. We have seen in Capital Volume 1 that in industry proper this labour of cleaning is performed by the working men gratis during the rest periods, and for that very reason often also during the process of production itself, and most accidents can be traced to this source. This labour does not figure in the price of the product. As far as that goes, the consumer receives it gratis. On the other hand, the capitalist thus does not pay the maintenance costs of the machine. The labourer pays in persona, and this is one of the mysteries of the self-preservation of capital, which in point of fact constitute a legal claim by the labourer on the machinery, on the strength of which he is a co-owner of the machine, even from the standpoint of bourgeois law. However, in various branches of production, in which the machinery must be removed from the process of production for the purpose of cleaning, and where, therefore, the cleaning cannot be performed in between, as, for instance, in the case of locomotives, this maintenance work counts as current expenses and is therefore an element of circulating capital. For instance, a goods engine should not run more than 3 days without being kept one day in the shed. If you attempt to wash out the boiler before it has cooled down, that is very injurious. Royal Commission on Railways, number 17823. The actual repairs or patchwork require expenditures of capital and labour which are not contained in the originally advanced capital, and cannot therefore be replaced and covered, at least not always, by the gradual replacement of the value of the fixed capital. For instance, if the value of the fixed capital is £10,000, and its total life is 10 years, then these £10,000, having been entirely converted into money after the lapse of 10 years, will replace only the value of the capital originally invested, but they do not replace the capital or labour added in the meantime for repairs. This is an additional component part of the value, which is not advanced all at one time, but whenever a need for it arises, and the various times for advancing it are, in the very nature of things, accidental. All fixed capital demands such subsequent, dosed-out, additional outlay of capital for instruments of labour and labour power. The damage which separate parts of the machinery, etc., may incur is naturally accidental, and so are, therefore, the repairs involved. Nevertheless, two kinds of repairs are to be distinguished in the general mass, which are of a more or less fixed character, and fall within various periods of the life of fixed capital. These are the ailments of childhood, and the far more numerous ailments of the post-middle durability period. A machine, for instance, may be commissioned in ever so perfect a condition. Still, actual use will reveal shortcomings which must be remedied by subsequent labour. On the other hand, the more a machine passes beyond the mid-durability point, the more, therefore, the normal wear and tear has accumulated, and the more the material of which it consists has been worn out and become decrepit, the more numerous and considerable will be the repairs required to keep it going for the remainder of its average durability. It is the same with an old man, who incurs more medical expenses to keep from dying prematurely than a young and strong man. So in spite of its accidental character, repair work is unevenly distributed over the various periods of life of fixed capital. From the foregoing, and from the generally accidental character of repair work on machines, it follows. In one respect, the actual expenditure of labour power and instruments of labour on repairs is accidental, like the circumstances which necessitate these repairs. The amount of the repairs needed is unevenly distributed over the different periods of fixed capital's life. In other respects, it is taken for granted in estimating the average life of fixed capital that it is constantly kept in good working order, partly by cleaning, including the cleaning of the premises, partly by repairs as often as required. The transfer of value through wear and tear of fixed capital is calculated on its average life, but this average life itself is based on the assumption that the additional capital required for maintenance purposes is continually advanced. But then it is also evident that the value added by this extra expenditure of capital and labour cannot enter into the price of the commodities concerned at the same time as it is incurred. For example, a manufacturer of yarn cannot sell his yarn dearer this week than last, merely because one of his wheels broke, or a belt tore this week. The general costs of spinning have not been changed in any way by this accident in some individual factory. Here, as in all determinations of value, the average decides. Experience shows the average occurrence of such accidents, and the average volume of the maintenance and repair work necessary during the average life of the fixed capital invested in a given branch of business. This average expense is distributed over the average life, and added to the price of the product in corresponding aliquot parts. Hence, it is replaced by means of its sale. The additional capital, which is thus replaced, belongs to the circulating capital, although the manner of its expenditure is irregular. As it is of paramount importance to remedy every damage to machinery immediately, every comparatively large factory employs, in addition to the regular factory force, special personnel, engineers, carpenters, mechanics, locksmiths, etc. Their wages are a part of the variable capital, and the value of their labour is distributed over the product. On the other hand, the expenses for means of production are calculated on the basis of the aforementioned average, according to which they form continually a part of the value of the product, although they are actually advanced in irregular periods, and therefore enter into the product or the fixed capital in irregular periods. This capital, expended in repairs properly so called, is in many respects a capital sui generis, of its own kind, which can be classed neither as circulating nor as fixed capital, but belongs with greater justification to the former, since it figures among the running expenses. The manner of bookkeeping does not, of course, change in any way the actual state of affairs booked, but it is important to note that customarily many lines of business figure the costs of repairs together with the actual wear and tear of the fixed capital in the following manner. Let the advanced fixed capital be £10,000 and its durability 15 years. The annual wear and tear is then £666.75. But the depreciation is calculated on a durability of only 10 years. In other words, £1,000 are added annually to the price of the produced commodities for wear and tear of the fixed capital, instead of £666.75. Thus, £333.75 are reserved for repairs, etc. The figures 10 and 15 are chosen only by way of illustration. This amount is spent on an average for repairs, so that the fixed capital may last 15 years. Such a calculation naturally does not prevent the fixed capital and the additional capital spent on repairs from belonging to different categories. On the strength of this mode of calculation, it was assumed, for instance, that the lowest cost estimate for the maintenance and replacement of steamships was 15% annually, the time of reproduction being, therefore, 6 2/3 years. In the 60s, the English government indemnified the Peninsula and Oriental Company at the annual rate of 16%, corresponding to a reproduction time of 6 1/4 years. On railways, the average life of a locomotive is 10 years, but the depreciation, counting in repairs, is taken as 12.5%, which brings down its durability to 8 years. In the case of passenger and goods cars, the estimate is 9%, or a durability of 11 1/9 years. Legislation has everywhere drawn a distinction, in leases of houses and other objects which represent fixed capital to their owners and are leased as such, between normal depreciation, which is the result of time, the action of the elements, and normal wear on the one hand, and on the other, those occasional repairs which are required from time to time for maintenance during the normal life of the house and during its normal use. As a rule, the former are borne by the owner, the latter by the tenant. Repairs are further divided into ordinary and substantial ones. The last named are partly a renewal of the fixed capital in its bodily form, and they fall likewise on the shoulders of the owner, unless the lease explicitly states the contrary. Take, for instance, the English law. Quote, "A tenant from year to year, on the other hand, is not bound to do more than keep the premises wind and watertight, when that can be done without substantial repairs, and generally to do repairs coming fairly under the head ordinary, even with respect to those parts of the premises which are the subject of ordinary repairs. Regard must be had to their age and general state and condition when he took possession, for he is not bound to replace old and worn-out materials with new ones, nor to make good the inevitable depreciation resulting from time and ordinary wear and tear." Unquote. Holdsworth, Law of Landlord and Tenant. Entirely different from the replacement of wear and tear and from the work of maintenance and repair is insurance, which relates to destruction caused by extraordinary phenomena of nature, fire, flood, etc. This must be made good out of the surplus value, and is a deduction from it. Or, considered from the point of view of society as a whole, there must be continuous overproduction, that is, production on a larger scale than is necessary for the simple replacement and reproduction of the existing wealth, quite apart from the increase in population, so as to be in possession of the means of production required to compensate for the extraordinary destruction caused by accidents and natural forces. In point of fact, only the smallest part of the capital needed for replacement consists of the money reserve fund. The most substantial part consists in the extension of the scale of production itself, which partly is actual expansion, and partly belongs to the normal volume of production in those branches of industry which produce the fixed capital. For instance, a machine factory must arrange things so that the factories of its customers can annually be extended, and that a number of them will always stand in need of total or partial reproduction. On determining the wear and tear as well as the costs of repairs, according to the social average, great disparity necessarily appears, even in the case of capital investments of equal size, operating otherwise under equal conditions and in the same branch of industry. In practice, a machine, etc., lasts with one capitalist longer than the average period, while with another it does not last so long. With the one, the costs of repairs are above, with the other below average. But the addition to the price of the commodities resulting from wear and tear and from costs of repairs is the same, and is determined by the average. The one, therefore, gets more out of this additional price than he really added, the other less. This circumstance, as well as all others which result in different gains for different capitalists in the same line of business with the same degree of exploitation of labour power, tends to enhance the difficulty of understanding the true nature of surplus value. The line between repairs proper and replacement, between costs of maintenance and costs of renewal, is rather flexible. Hence the eternal dispute, for instance, in railroading, whether certain expenses are for repairs or for replacement, whether they must be defrayed from current expenditures or from the original stock. A transfer of expenses for repairs to capital account instead of revenue account is the familiar method by which railway boards of directors artificially inflate their dividends. However, experience has already furnished the most important clues for this. According to Lardner, the subsequent labour required during the early life of a railway, for example, quote, ought not to be denominated repairs, but should be considered as an essential part of the construction of the railway, and in the financial accounts should be debited to capital and not to revenue, not being expenses due to wear and tear or to the legitimate operation of the traffic, but to the original and inevitable incompleteness of the construction of the line, unquote. Lardner, Railway Economy. Quote, the only sound way is to charge each year's revenue with the depreciation necessarily suffered to earn the revenue, whether the amount is actually spent or not, unquote. Captain Fitzmaurice, Committee of Inquiry on Caledonian Railway. Published in Money Market Review, 1867. The separation of the replacement and maintenance of fixed capital become practically impossible and purposeless in agriculture, at least when not operated by steam. According to Kirchhoff, Handbuch der landwirtschaftlichen Betriebslehre, Dresden, 1852, quote, wherever there is a complete, though not excessive, supply of implements, of agricultural and other implements and farm appliances of every description, it is the custom to estimate the annual wear and tear and maintenance of the implements according to the different existing conditions, at a general average of 15 to 25% of the original stock. Unquote. In the case of the rolling stock of a railway, repairs and replacement cannot be separated at all. Quote, "We maintain our stock by number. Whatever number of engines we have, we maintain that. If one is destroyed by age, and it is better to build a new one, we build it at the expense of revenue, of course, taking credit for the materials of the old one as far as they go. There is a great deal left. There are the wheels, the axles, the boilers, and in fact a great deal of the old engine is left." Unquote. T. Gooch, Chairman of Great Western Railway Company, Royal Commission on Railways Numbers 17327 to 17329. Quote, "Repairing means renewing. I do not believe in the word replacement. Once a railway company has bought a vehicle or an engine, it ought to be repaired, and in that way admit of going on forever." Unquote. Royal Commission on Railways Number 17784. Quote, "The engines are maintained forever out of this eightpence halfpenny. We rebuild our engines. If you purchase an engine entirely, it would be spending more money than is necessary. Yet there is always a pair of wheels or an axle or some portion of the engine which comes in, and hence it cheapens the cost of producing a practically new engine." Unquote. Royal Commission on Railways, number 17790. Quote, "I am at this moment turning out a new engine every week, or practically a new engine, for it has a new boiler, cylinder, or framing." Unquote. Royal Commission on Railways, number 17823, Archibald Sturrock, Locomotive Superintendent of Great Northern Railway, 1867. The same with coaches. Quote, "In the course of time, the stock of engines and vehicles is continually repaired. New wheels are put on at one time, and a new body at another. The different moving parts most subject to wear are gradually renewed, and the engines and vehicles may be conceived even to be subject to such a succession of repairs that in many of them not a vestige of the original materials remains. Even in this case, however, the old materials of coaches or engines are more or less worked up into other vehicles or engines, and never totally disappear from the road. The movable capital, therefore, may be considered to be in a state of continual reproduction, and that which in the case of the permanent way must take place altogether at a future epoch, when the entire road will have to be relaid, takes place in the rolling stock gradually from year to year. Its existence is perennial, and it is in a constant state of rejuvenescence." Unquote. Lardner, Railway Economy. This process, which Lardner here describes relative to a railway, does not fit the case of an individual factory, but may well serve as an illustration of continuous partial reproduction of fixed capital intermingled with repairs within an entire branch of industry, or even within the aggregate production considered on a social scale. Here is proof of the length to which adroit boards of directors may go in manipulating the terms repairs and replacement for the purpose of extracting dividends. According to the quoted paper read by R.P. Williams, various English railway companies wrote off the following sums from the revenue account as averages over a number of years for repairs and maintenance of the permanent way and buildings. Per English mile of track annually. London and North Western, £370, Midland, £225, London and South Western, £257, Great Northern, £360, Lancashire and Yorkshire, £377, South Eastern, £263, Brighton, £266, Manchester and Sheffield, £200. These differences arise only to a very minor degree from differences in the actual expenses. They are due almost exclusively to different methods of calculation, according to whether items of expenses are debited to the capital or the revenue account. William says so in so many words that a lesser charge is booked because this is necessary for a good dividend, and a higher charge is booked because there is a greater revenue which can bear it. In certain cases, the wear and tear, and therefore its replacement, is practically infinitesimal, so that nothing but costs of repairs have to be charged. Lardner's statements below relative to works of art in railroading apply in general to all such durable structures as docks, canals, iron and stone bridges, etc. Quote, "The wear and tear which, being due to the slow operation of time acting upon the more solid structures, produces an effect altogether insensible when observed through short periods, but which, after a long interval of time, such, for example, as centuries, must necessitate the reconstruction of some or all, even of the most solid structures. These changes may not unaptly be assimilated to the periodical and secular inequalities which take place in the movements of the great bodies of the universe. The operation of time upon the more massive works of art upon the railway, such as the bridges, tunnels, viaducts, etc., afford examples of what may be called the secular wear and tear. The more rapid and visible deterioration, which is made good by repairs or reconstruction effected at shorter intervals, is analogous to the periodic inequalities. In the annual repairs is included the casual damage which the exterior of the more solid and durable works may from time to time sustain, but independently of these repairs, age produces its effects even on these structures, and an epoch must arrive, however remote it be, at which they would be reduced to a state which will necessitate their reconstruction. For financial and economic purposes, such an epoch is perhaps too remote to render it necessary to bring it into practical calculation, and therefore it need here only be noticed in passing." Unquote. Lardner, Railway Economy. This applies to all similar structures of secular duration, in which cases, therefore, the capital advanced need not be gradually replaced commensurate with their wear and tear, but only the annual average costs of maintenance and repair need be transferred to the prices of the product. Although, as we have seen, a greater part of the money returning for the replacement of the wear and tear of the fixed capital is annually, or even in shorter intervals, reconverted into its bodily form, nevertheless, every single capitalist requires a sinking fund for that part of his fixed capital which falls due for reproduction only after a lapse of years, but must then be entirely replaced. A considerable component part of the fixed capital precludes gradual reproduction because of its peculiar properties. Besides, in cases where the reproduction takes place piecemeal, in such a way that at short intervals new stock is added to the depreciated old stock, a previous accumulation of money of a greater or smaller amount, depending on the specific character of the branch of industry, is necessary before the replacement can be effected. Not just any sum of money will suffice for this purpose. A definite amount is needed. If we study this question on the assumption of simple circulation of money, without regard to the credit system, of which we shall treat later in parts 4 and 5 of the third volume of Capital, then the mechanism of this movement is as follows. It was shown in Volume 1, Chapter 3, Section 3a, that the proportion in which the aggregate mass of money is distributed over a hoard and means of circulation varies steadily. If one part of the money available in society constantly lies fallow as a hoard, while another performs the functions of a medium of circulation or of an immediate reserve fund of the directly circulating money. Now, in our case, money that must be accumulated as a hoard in the hands of a relatively big capitalist in rather large amounts is thrown all at once into circulation on the purchase of the fixed capital. It then divides again in society into medium of circulation and hoard. By means of the sinking fund, in which the value of the fixed capital flows back to its starting point in proportion to its wear and tear, a part of the circulating money again forms a hoard, for a longer or shorter period, in the hands of the same capitalist whose hoard had, upon the purchase of the fixed capital, been transformed into a medium of circulation and passed away from him. It is a continually changing distribution of the hoard which exists in society and alternately functions as a medium of circulation and then is separated again as a hoard from the mass of the circulating money. With the development of the credit system, which necessarily runs parallel with the development of modern industry and capitalist production, this money no longer serves as a hoard, but as capital. However, not in the hands of its owner, but of other capitalists at whose disposal it has been placed.